Good evening, it's 11 o'clock and welcome to The Blues. I'm Lee Hay. Tonight, a bit of a twist on The Blues. We'll begin in the first set with songs by Bobby Rush, Marquise Knox, and Ben Levin. Then you'll hear about the Freedom 55 series in a conversation with Dion Brown and Jacqueline Dace from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Later in the show, you'll hear Ron Esposito's 2017 and 2018 discussions with Ben Levin about his music, and we'll end with a song from Bobby Rush, On the Blues.
Three, four. My boss, I won't be in. I said, call my job and tell my boss I won't be in. I want you to make up alibi. Had too much weekend. I know what my woman thinks. I said, call my house, 'cause I know what my woman be thinking. You know, I'm not drunk, but I sure been drinking. I can't go to work today. I said, call my job, tell my boss I can't go to work today. Oh, make up an alibi. I had too much weekend. I got high and I didn't go home. Mary Jane, Mary Jane, Mary Jane, can't you see what you done? Make up an alibi when you call my boss. I had too much weekend. Here it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and the rooster crowing for day. Here it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and the rooster crowing for day. When you call my boss name, already know what he wanna say. Let me play a little bit, right? Mary Jane, Mary Jane, Mary Jane. to see what you've done. You know I can't even find my car. Tell my boss I won't be in. I said, call my job, call my job. Tell my boss I won't be in. Oh, make up me an alibi some kind of way, anything. In fact, I had too much weekend. Oh, got a hangover. Can't afford to miss a day because paycheck gets short. Been here too long to lose my job because of a little good time. But I had a good time last night in the hole of the wall. Got a hangover.
Thank you. Georgia fried fish. Yes, on a Friday night, baby, we'd have that country fried fish. Well, not bring what you want, long as you bring a side dish. Yes, on a Saturday morning, but still the blues be rolling on. Next Friday.
Thank you.
From Ben's Blues, that was Ben Levin with a tribute to Mr. Perkins. Before that, Marquise Knox, Juke Joint Blues. And Too Much Weekend at the beginning of the set, Bobby Rush with Blind Dog Smokin' from an album called Decisions. Here's my interview with Dion Brown and Jacqueline Dace from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center on April 4th. You'll hear a discussion of their program, Freedom 55, Music Moved the Movement, Civil Rights and the Blues discussion with Bobby Rush and Marquise Knox, which is coming up Thursday, April 18th, followed by a concert by Marquise Knox and Ben Levin on April 19th. The National Underground Railroad Freedom Center has begun a program called the Freedom 55 series, which brings attention to the 55th anniversary of Freedom Summer. Scheduled throughout the rest of this year are screenings, book signings, lectures, and concerts. With us in the studio to talk about this program are Dion Brown, President and COO of the Freedom Center, and Jacqueline Dace, Deputy Director. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with some history. Freedom Summer, 1964, voter registration drive. Share the history and also its connection to Miami University.
The Freedom Summer volunteers were actually trained at Western College of Women, which is now Miami University, in 1965, a two-week period of time prior to them going to Mississippi to begin the voter registration drive. And you had upwards of almost 700 students from the North that were involved in Freedom Summer, and many of them were trained right here at Miami University. So some of those individuals that were involved in Freedom Summer in 1964 are the people that we are bringing to the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center to talk about not only the activities that they developed and the strategies that they developed in 1964, but also the legacy of Freedom Summer and all of the things that we are currently living with that we may not know are the results of what happened during that time period. But also, you know, to show people some of the positive ways of developing protest actions.
And Freedom Summer, was that in?
It was in Mississippi. Primarily in Mississippi. It was in the Deep South, but most of the activities occurred in Mississippi.
And there were a lot of civil rights movement protests during that period. That was a very volatile time.
Yeah, it was dangerous to go to Mississippi. Mississippi was one of the most dangerous areas in the nation, known as one of the most dangerous areas in the nation. One of the leader of the Freedom Summer movement, Bob Moses, who will actually be at the museum on June 27th, he always said, when you're in Mississippi, the rest of the world doesn't feel real. And when you're in the rest of the world, Mississippi doesn't seem real. And having lived there for 3 years, I know exactly what he means. I mean, you still feel like you're in a different place when you're living in Mississippi.
And how did all of this impact the blues musicians who were performing in that area?
Oh, they lived it. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, they lived the experience. And that's one of the great things that, you know, one of the programs that we've developed is Music Moved the Movement, Civil Rights and the Blues. So you had these blues musicians, especially those of the older generation that were born in the Deep South. They were born in the Delta. They experienced it. Not only were they involved in their own personal life and their own personal struggles, but many of them began to participate in the movement in one way or the other. Their song sings about the conditions in which they live in. I consider blues musicians some of the first revolutionaries because, you know, in order for them to begin to express themselves, they were singing something that was rather dangerous at that time period, talking about the conditions in which they were living in and expressing what was happening to them on a daily basis. So we have, as I mentioned, Music Moved the Movement, Civil Rights and the Blues. We have Bobby Rush that will be here on April the 18th, and Marquise Knox. And we'll have a discussion with Bobby Rush and Marquise about how civil rights and the blues are interconnected.
You know, during the IBC's International Blues Challenge down in Memphis, Marquise and Bobby did a discussion there, and it was so well attended. It was supposed to go, I believe, an hour, hour and a half. It ended up going 3 hours. They were so engaged in their conversation and had everybody wanting to see it. So I actually, we created this program back in St. Louis, actually, Music Moves the Movement, and that's where we started it. And one of the pillars I said when I came here is that we would do live music. I'm a firm believer that music brings all people together. And this is just the beginning. We've done a concert already that we partnered with Robbie Todd, a local person. Now we have this one coming up. And then we're in the works. We're not ready to release it yet, but we're in the works of doing a nice gospel one, how music moves the movement, and then also a jazz one. So we're going to keep the music going.
And the next evening on April 19th, you've got a concert.
Right. April 19th, Marquise Knox, and we're going to have local Ben Levin opening up for him. So really looking forward to it. If you want tickets, you know, contact the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. It's limited number of tickets. And I'm telling you, Cincinnati may know about Ben Levin, but just Google Marquise Knox. I mean, he's international and young guy, 27 years old. Actually, I had Marquise open up for B.B. King when I worked at the B.B. King Museum, come down and open up. I believe it was B.B.'s last homecoming in Indianola, Mississippi. And he electrified the crowd there, and he's going to do the same thing here in Cincinnati. And Bobby Rush will be here. He's not asked to perform, but he'll be in attendance, so we'll see what happens with that.
So you must have been familiar with some of the activities of the civil rights movement when you were down at the B.B. King Museum.
Oh, Mississippi, the Delta, the whole state, but in the Delta, there's so much history, civil rights history, you know, from Fannie Lou Hamer, where she stepped up, I mean, the courthouse that she actually made her comments at. Her hometown is not that far away. You know, Fannie Lou Hamer is the one that coined the phrase, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired."
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you got Money, Mississippi. I mean, if anybody want to really get a deep dive into the civil rights, there is a civil rights trail in Mississippi. There's a blues trail in Mississippi. And it's just so many markers down there for you to really getting inducted into what the movement started out and what was really going on. And to this day, in some aspects, still go on. I mean, in the Delta, you still have blues musicians singing about current conditions. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I actually worked in Mississippi also at the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum, helping in the development and the building of that facility. And prior to that, I had taught civil rights history as well as researched civil rights history. But I tell everybody that I actually feel like I got a PhD in civil rights when I moved to Mississippi, because it's a difference when you are not only immersed in that culture, but you're also talking directly and one-on-one with those people that were involved in the movement, the foot soldiers, as well as those people that were instrumental in developing the civil rights movement, as well as being around the community and people who live this experience.
That's like, what's incredible about living or even visiting Mississippi. You're down there where all the stuff you read about, saw on TV, the movies, the documentaries. Mm-hmm. You're actually either down there. Some of those people are still living, like the brother who integrated Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Got a chance to meet him.
James Meredith.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Got a chance to meet him. Everyday people. It's the first person to do this or the first black to do that. To hear the stories and to hear the struggle and what they had to do to get to where they are now. Mm-hmm. Those are some incredible stories.
And it's revealing so much more information. I worked at the Mississippi Department of Archives and History, and that's where the Sovereignty Commission files were located. And actually, one of the individuals that was instrumental in getting those files, filing the lawsuit that got those files released, is Jerry Mitchell. He's a reporter for, or was a reporter for Clarion newspaper. He'll be here in September. And, you know, looking through the Sovereignty Commission files of Mississippi, it's so revealing because you get to see what the state was involved in terms of trying to squash the civil rights activists, and also how some of the government itself was involved in some of the more vicious activities that occurred to people. And so I'm telling you, it's amazing. I tell people, if you want to know civil rights, you really do need to go into Mississippi, because some of the information, as in Alabama, it was filmed, but a lot of it, you know, it was controlled through the state government, and a lot of that wasn't shown in Mississippi. And so they had to place lawsuits for that information to be revealed. And so for people to have stood up for what they believed in a place where they were isolated and insulated so much, and still in a lot of ways, they're very isolated and insulated, because you get off the highway and get on those two-lane roads down into the Delta, you're nowhere. I mean, I've gotten lost there and GPS don't pick you up. So yeah, I can't imagine. And I used to ask them all the time, what did it feel like in 1964 to be there? Because I know what it felt like in 2012, 2016 to be there. And I can't imagine what it would feel like 55 years ago or 60 years ago. And also knowing what had happened.
And I will add, though, I love Mississippi. Man, the culture, the history, the people.
The food.
Oh, yeah. Man, let's not even talk about the food. Oh, yeah. I put on 40 pounds now and then. I'm serious. But, you know, Mississippi is such a draw that you have people now going back. They're retired in Chicago, you know, from the Great Migration. Everybody went north. But now you have people, as far as the Delta go, that's where they want to go. I remember my grandfather, who was from Forest, Mississippi. He said before he died, he wanted to go back to Mississippi. He didn't get a chance to live to see that I went back. Well, not went back. I lived there. I got a chance to go live there. But I tell my wife, I joke with her, you know, when we retire, I want someplace warm and I want Mississippi. I don't think she's going, though, but it's a life adjustment. But once you get there, I'm telling you, I enjoyed my time in Mississippi, not just because of, like I say, because of who I worked for, but meeting the people, you know, the culture itself. I mean, it's a great way of life for me. I mean,
and
it's
I,
an experience.
I had a different experience. I can
now,
say
see, she was in the city. Yeah, I was in the Delta. So to me, it was like when I lived in Korea, I was at Kumsan Air Force Base, was a little bitty old thing. The people up at Yongsan was like living in New York. So I'm in a little bitty corner, and she's got the whole house.
Yeah, I was in Jackson, and I traveled throughout the state of Mississippi. But, you know, and I think also because my focus was about the civil rights movement, and I was dealing on a daily basis with these activists. And in reality, a lot of them are still experiencing PTSD because of the experiences that they went through and, you know, watching people being killed, getting beat, watching their families' livelihood being taken away from them. And so it was an emotional experience. And for me, I love Mississippi because Mississippi is part of who I am. My mother and father are from Mississippi. We still have family land in two different areas in Mississippi. And I told everybody I had to leave before I started hating Mississippi. But it was an emotional, it was extremely emotional time for me there.
And that's the difference. And that's what Jackie and I connect. She saw it from the civil rights aspect, and I saw it from the blues aspect. Mm-hmm. And that's how we've been able to come up with the programming that we have. You know, this year with Freedom 55, actually, we'll be opening up a quilt exhibit. You know, everything we do this year is focused on that. We're partnering with NKU, UC.
Miami University.
Yes, partnering
right.
with so many different, Xavier. Because it's a big story. People hear civil rights and think it's just a black movement. And that's not accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, civil rights is self-impacted. Of course, the women's movement.
Exactly.
LGBTQ, it's actually, when you talk about the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, it's what's instrumental in how we have our Republican and Democrat parties right now, because it was because of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party that those ideologies kind of shifted during that time period. The War on Poverty campaign that came out of Mississippi, the kindergarten schools that came out of Mississippi. It's so much more that we're living with right now. I detest when I hear people say that the civil rights movement was only because we wanted to sit at a lunch counter with white people or we wanted to be at a restaurant with whites. I detest that because that tells me that you have really no idea what the civil rights movement was about. And, you know, for me, I really have so much respect and so much adoration for those individuals that put their lives on the line for those of us that were coming after them, those of us, they had no idea who we were and the impact that that has had, not only, like I said, 1950s, 1960s, the modern civil rights movement of that period, because as we know, civil rights was happening ever since the humans have, especially African Americans, arrived on our shores. But the modern civil rights movement itself, the impact that it has continued to have on us every day, you know, I think people need to respect those individuals. Those individuals put their lives, their family lives, their financial lives on the line. And many of them, like Bob Moses, Dave Dennis, Charlie Cobb, they were not from Mississippi. They went to Mississippi. Joan Mulholland Trumpier, who will be here in June, she's not from Mississippi. She went to Mississippi. And so, you know, for those people to have that type of a dedication, that type of an allegiance to understanding that there should be more of a humanity toward individuals, that means a lot. And Dion mentioned, because I want to make sure we get in, the fact that we have Dr. Carolyn Maslumi's quilt exhibit that's opening on April the 6th. And having worked with Dr. Maslumi, again, somebody else I have nothing but the highest degree of adoration for, because I went to her and asked her about developing an exhibit in a very, very short period of time that focused on Freedom 55 and the civil rights movement.
Isn't she from Westchester?
Yes, yes, yes.
So she's local, but she's known nationally.
She's local, she's known nationally.
She lived in L.A. for a long time, mm-hmm. though, didn't she? She came back here to be with her family, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, and the exhibit is titled We Who Believe in Freedom. All of the quilts have, whether it's a modern civil rights content, she's collected quilts from all over the nation, from her Quilters Network, and they have a story to tell within themselves, not only in terms of the historical, but also the contemporary time.
And that exhibit goes through July 12th?
It goes through July 12th, April the 6th through July 12th at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, and we hope that you come out and see it.
Now, weren't quilts fundamental to the Underground Railroad?
There is a urban legend in terms of the importance of quilts in the Underground Railroad. Quilts in itself has been the way of which it's sort of a storytelling process throughout the African-American community because it's patchwork. So people put together the patchworks of the quilts to make a warm, functional device for people to live with. So you had all of these materials. So that's what people actually developed, the patchwork. But then they started creating them into designs and methodologies. But you know, the idea that the quilts itself was leading people throughout the pathway of the Underground Railroad, I think that's a urban legend that has continued to perpetuate throughout time.
I know my grandmother's from Mississippi, and she made some mean quilts, but we just used them to keep warm.
Right. You know? That's what, they were functional.
And it was all kind of material that it wasn't just one piece of fabric. I mean, it could be anything on there, but mm-hmm. I remember my kids fighting me over my quilt. I mean, I kept it till, I mean, it was in shreds. Mm.
One of my artists that I knew when I was in St. Louis, Edna Patterson Petty, she developed this one quilt for a poet that was one of my friends also, Eugene Redmond. And she put together many pieces of his old clothing and told his life story throughout this quilt. Beautiful piece. I mean, it's just a beautiful piece, and you can follow his life trajectory through that quilt. And I was like, oh, I love that. And the other one she did was Black Butterfly. And it's a beautiful, you know, again, quilts can tell the story. It's the oral tradition. It tells the story. It documents the history. So there is so much more that's embedded within the quilt. And these people that Dr. Mazumi has put together, as well as she has a couple of quilts herself in this exhibit, you know, they're telling a story. They're talking about what happened in, again, the 60s and the 50s, but also talking about what happened in 2010 and, you know, to contemporary times.
So we've got two events coming up, April 18th and April 19th. The one on April 18th will be a discussion.
Yes, and it's free. We're doing actually a reception that starts at 6 o'clock, and Bobby and Marquise take the stage right at around 7 for their discussion. You know, and it's polar opposites. Bobby is a Grammy Award winning artist, bluesman, 83, 85 years old. Actually, he's in France right now. And then from there, he's going to Utah for a couple of shows. But he took time out. We called him up and it wasn't even a question. He checked his calendar, said, I'm there. And actually, he's coming in a day early just to relax and take in the museum. Bobby, when we were at the National Blues Museum, he came by whenever he was in town just to see the museum. He was our grand marshal for that museum. So he is a deeply connected person. Then you take Marquise Knox, the great blues musician that he is. He's only 27. And so you're going to get it from two different angles. And Bobby has some stories. If he tells any of them that he told us in St. Louis, and I've been knowing him since probably 2010, he's got some stories to tell you.
Yeah, because he's known as a blues musician, but people don't know his civil rights actions.
With Martin Luther King,
yeah, and his own personal stories that are involved in the movement. So, yeah, that's the 18th is the panel discussion, which Dion mentioned. The reception is 6 o'clock. The panel discussion is at 7. It's free.
And it's free because we thought it was very important for people to come by, not only just to see Bobby and Marquise, but to hear their stories. So we're going to even feed you some. And Jackie, when it comes to budgeting, I have to keep a watch on because I'm not even thinking about how much.
I don't believe in people coming to your house if they can't eat.
So do people need to make reservations?
Yes, they can go on Eventbrite, Jackie.
Yeah, you can either go on our website, the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center's website, nurfc.org, or you can go and check us out on Facebook, Twitter. you know, Instagram, and we'll have a link on the events page for the program on the 18th, Music Move the Movement, Civil Rights and the Blues, and you can register online there.
And that one's free, so I don't want people to get confused, because the very next night, as you say, is the concert.
Right. And that one features two younger blues musicians.
Right, we have Marquise Knox, again, from St. Louis, and Marquise is the headliner. And that concert begins at 7 o'clock, but we have our local blues musician, Ben.
And he's international. Ben is international. Mm-hmm. Actually, we did a concert in St. Louis, and this is how I met him, actually, called Boogie Woogie Stomp Down or something like that. And he came and just really electrified the crowd. And his dad and I talked then. I said, hey, by the way, I'm coming to Cincinnati. He said, great. And he said, I'd like to work with you. And so with Marquise coming, I thought it'd be a perfect chance. And he's been wanting to work with Marquise also. So this gives him a great opportunity to show Cincinnati, actually, what young blues sounds like. Because sometimes people get the conception that blues is that old, whiny music. But both of these are some electrifying people. And it's blues, and it's true blues.
And we can tell you, come to prepare to have some fun.
Oh, come dance. Know?
I mean,
come dance.
I saw that part about dancing, so you don't want people just sitting there.
Oh, no,
let me tell you,
we
intentionally doing it in a separate room, because I didn't want to do it in the theater, because it's theater seating. I want it so people can get up and dance, because both of these individuals will have Jackie up from the time it starts till it's over. It's going to be plenty of dancing.
It's impossible for me to listen to music and not dance. I mean, I just have to.
And let me preface it, too, with the blues. This is not slacks, jacket type. If you want to wear it and feel good, go ahead. But when we play the blues, it's come as you are.
Be comfortable.
Well, it sounds like it's
you know what
be
I'm
fun.
Talking about with how the blues is. Lee.
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw Ben there in the theater last May. I think it was right after he graduated.
It was June.
Was it June?
Yeah.
Oh, talk about exciting.
That's what I'm saying.
He is something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's really, really something. So you guys have put together a really great program. Right.
The whole year. I want to thank the team for coming together. This year is just mapped out so well. It's our 15th anniversary. We have a program coming up in August 22nd, where we're going to honor John Pepper, Reverend Lynch, and a couple other individuals for what they've done for the museum for these 15 years. And just the whole year as a whole. It's doing great work, and I couldn't ask for a better team.
Well, we'll have to have you come back in and talk about that for Around Cincinnati.
Yes, ma'am. Appreciate you.
Yeah, we want to share, because you guys are doing great work down there.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, thanks for coming in tonight.
Always.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Lee. When are we going to do that blues show together?
We've got to do another one, huh? I mean, we've got to do a regular one.
With some music.
Yeah. Over the summer, maybe, if you've got some time.
Anything for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
That was Dion Brown and Jacqueline Dace from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Now let's turn to Ben Levin. Ben Levin came into WVXU's studio on October 19, 2017 and May 27, 2018 to talk with Ron Esposito and play a song in our Corbett studio. Here are the highlights from these two conversations.
Good evening. I'm Ron Esposito, and it's a pleasure to be with you this evening. Tonight, we're going to flip, flop, and fly. We're going to have a rent party in a bluesy fish fry. Because we got a killer diller piano player with us tonight, Mr. Ben Levin. And we're going to be talking about his debut recording, Ben's Blues. Ben Levin, welcome to WVXU.
Hey, glad to be here, Ron.
I tell you what, when Lee laid this CD on me, it was like, I can't wait to check this out. Then I put it on, man, and it was like, yeah, this is cool.
Thank you.
Very cool. And I love that your main guy, Ricky Nye, plays drums on it, and some of Ricky's band is also on this recording.
That's right. Chris Douglas on the bass, and my dad, Aaron Levin, on guitars.
Also, rounding out the group is Steve Snyder, harmonica. How did you get into this stuff?
Well, I always joke with people, you know, I was hearing blues in the womb. My dad was playing Muddy Waters up to me when I was in my mom's belly, you know. So ever since I was a little kid, I've been exposed to this music. And my dad hooked up with Ricky when I was about maybe 8 years old and asked him if he could teach me some things on piano. Said, well, you know, normally I don't teach kids, but we'll give it a try, you know. And so I've been taking with Ricky ever since I was 8 years old.
I'm looking over the compositions. There's a few of your own on here.
Yeah.
They're like right in the tradition of the style that you play, blues and boogie-woogie. I can really hear a deep influence from Professor Long here.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorites. That's one of the first guys where I was just blown away by the piano. His sound, it's like a full band with two hands on the piano, you know?
And were you influenced by Fess vocally a little bit as well?
A little bit. You know, when I was a little kid, I'd sit and listen and try to imitate his voice. And, you know, my dad teased me, you know, Ben, you got to develop your own sound. But I definitely was influenced by his singing.
Aside from Professor Long here, how deep do you go with the guys that have influenced you?
Well, I listened to a lot of piano playing from a local musician, Big Joe Duskin. He was a big influence on Ricky Nye, my teacher. So, you know, we like to say that Big Joe is like my musical grandfather.
You know, a lot of these guys have like these outsized personalities, you know. Big Joe was just as down home as you could get. So there's a great quality that communicates in this music. So you want to tell us about the originals and some of the other composers that you're playing?
So we talked earlier about Professor Long here. I cover two of his tunes on here, the second and third track, Willie Mae and Hey Now Baby. And then another tune I do on here is by Henry Gray. It's called Cold Chills. And Henry Gray is a really great piano player because, you know, he came out of Louisiana like Professor Long here, but rather than going a little more mainstream with 50s R&B, he was a strict blues man. He played with Howlin' Wolf in the 50s and Elmore James and guys like that. So I always loved his piano playing. And, you know, one of my originals, a tribute to Mr. Perkins, that's Pine Top Perkins, another one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I've always been listening to Muddy Waters, and one of my favorite eras of Muddy was when Pine Top was backing him up in the band, you know. And, of course, some of my original compositions, like Little Girl, I was recording the CD right when I went through my first breakup. So I thought, well, I got to put, you know, all this emotion to something. And my dad said, well, you know, you ought to write a tune about it. Okay. So you know, I came back home from school after a long day and sat behind the piano and thought about it. And, you know, those lyrics kind of hit me.
Breakups have been great fuel for art through the millennia.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so you guys recorded at Ultra Suede, right?
Yeah, at Ultra Suede Studio.
Had you been in a recording studio before?
It was my first time in a recording studio, and I really dug this place because you just walk in, and it's just super relaxed. It feels like home already, you know? There's no pressure in there. Just do your thing.
Who is the engineer?
John Hoffman.
Yeah, I talked to those guys about the history of that room and its relationship to QCA Records. It was, you know, a great room for recording back in the day here in Cincinnati. So you go into the studio, and what are you thinking? What are you feeling?
I'm nervous. You know, it's my first time stepping foot in a studio. And, you know, luckily I had my group of guys around me, Ricky, my teacher, and Chris Douglas, who I've played with for years.
Okay,
and,
cool.
Of course, my dad on guitar, so I got a lot of support in the room. And so, you know, the main thing everybody's telling me is just relax and play it just like it's any other show.
And that's true. That's right. Because if you overthink it, forget it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple tunes on here where we might have had to run through it 10 or 15 times to the point where we had to take a breather and come back. But nothing too bad, you know.
So are you looking to be a professional musician?
I think right now I want to keep my music on the side and find some different day job, play, you know, every weekend. But I'm not really sure yet, to be honest with you.
No, sure. So you're playing mostly on electric keyboards. You get to play acoustic pianos at
well,
times.
That's the thing. You know, a lot of shows in Cincinnati, the venues don't have pianos, so right. I'll have to bring my keyboard. You know, there's a lot of piano players who try to do that as little as possible, but it doesn't really bother me, you know, either way.
Yeah, so you're playing a keyboard that maybe has weighted keys.
Right, a full size.
And then
size.
It's full size, 88.
That's right.
You don't quite have a Bösendorfer electronic keyboard yet. So what else you want to tell us?
I just got back from my first trip overseas.
Well, man, tell me about that.
Well, like I said, my dad's my booking agent. He's been emailing festival organizers in Europe for the past couple years trying to get me over there. And finally, this past summer, we heard something back. So I got to play at this festival in France called the Le Roquebrune Boogie Woogie Festival. And I mean, it was incredible. There might have been a couple thousand people in this crowd, this huge stage. But what was really fun was, you know, when I got to relax after the show, was this village had a couple of clubs with pianos in it, and people would just play from sun up till sundown. And I was out one night till 4 a.m. just pounding out some boogie.
My man.
Yeah. It was a really fun time.
Has Ricky been able to help you with any of this stuff as well?
He definitely helped me get connected with these guys. You know, the band I used over there, those are all Ricky's guys from the Paris Blues Band who he's recorded with. So, yeah, he was definitely a huge help.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Where is your recording available? How can people get Ben's Blues?
Order a copy on my website, benlevinpiano.com. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you ever come to see me play, I always have copies with me for sale.
You got it at Shake It or Everybody's by any chance?
Thank you. Yes. I also have my record available at Shake It Records and Everybody's Records.
So we just heard a tune from you. Why don't you tell us about it?
Sure. So that was a Cincinnati Stomp. It was written by Big Joe Duskin. And the reason I played that tune is because the second half of that album was recorded in Chicago. And believe it or not, Bob Margolin actually played guitar on that session.
Why don't you tell us this last tune that you're going to play for us?
This last tune is something very special. It's called After Hours. And this is something that Bob Margolin and the legendary blues band, they always opened up with this to invite Muddy Waters up to stage. And they had Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson on the microphone say, "Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready? Star time once again. How about a hand for the father of the blues, Muddy Mississippi Waters?" And that was Bob Margolin right beside him playing. So it was really a special tune.
Thank you.
We've been in conversation with pianist and vocalist Ben Levin.
For the love of a woman, a man will do anything. Work in the snow, sleep out in the rain. There ain't nothing a man won't do when he loves this woman the way I love you. When a man loves a woman, he'll give his all, stick by her side through her begging calls. There ain't nothing a man won't do when he loves his woman like I love you. He'll give her money, buy her diamond ring, buy her cars, house and everything. There ain't nothing a man won't do when he loves his woman like I love you.
That was Bobby Rush, Love of a Woman, from his album Decisions. Thanks for listening to The Blues on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford. You'll find links to the Freedom 55 series at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Lee Hay.